Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, November 13th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello.
Here.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Fellows is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Arnold.
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Here. Item three is our flag salute, and this evening we have Boy Scout Troop 489 who is here and will lead us in the flag salute. And then if you would please remain standing. I think Troop 489 is here. There they are in the back. Okay. And then if you would please remain standing for our invocation. Dr. Paul Jones is here and will do that for us this evening.
Would you please bow your heart in prayer with me tonight? Our Heavenly Father, James Madison was the principal author of the United States Constitution. He was the father of the Bill of Rights and our fourth president of the United States. It was he who said, "Courage has shaped the future of our country." In true repentance, we ask you, our God, to protect and to preserve our beloved country and cause our leaders to honor and to follow you. Grant to each of our leaders, nationally and locally, clear guidance and moral courage as they make decisions that directly influence our policies and laws. It is recorded in Holy Scripture that King Solomon declared in 930 BC, "God is a shield to those who put their trust in him. He who trusts in the Lord shall prosper." And further he said, "Whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe and secure." And it was his father, King David, who wrote, "He that trusteth in the Lord, mercy shall surround him." Our forefathers read and reread these portions of Holy Scripture and anchored their faith and their future to them. And as a result, President Abraham Lincoln in 1863 had the phrase, "In God we trust," engraved on each U.S. coin. And later this phrase was authorized to be printed on each U.S. paper currency. And in 1956, the United States Congress passed a resolution declaring our national motto, "In God we trust." And so tonight, we boldly affirm our nation's motto, "In God we trust." And in this spirit, we pray this invocation. We are grateful for all those that make it possible for us to have this public city council meeting. We invoke your blessing upon each council member. They are our friends. We have freely elected them to serve us, and we pray for them often. Cause each of them to understand that they cannot possibly discharge their responsibilities or their assigned task apart from your divine enablement. Bless them and their support staff with the strength and the security of your invisible presence, and grant to each of them your divine direction in their thought processes. This will bring proper solutions to each problem and each need that they encounter. And this will benefit each citizen and guest in our beautiful city. This invocation we pray in the name of our personal Savior and Lord. Amen.
Takes us to item number five, our special presentations. And we do indeed have a very special presentation, series of presentations to make this evening. And I'm going to step down from the dais to do that. You know, one of the perks of being mayor is that you get to participate in a number of presentations and activities and opportunities to recognize people throughout the community for the many positive events that take place in our community. It's especially gratifying this evening because we have an opportunity to recognize our young adults, and it's all of these fine young men and women sitting in the front row. And this is one of those special occasions that that I look forward to. So I'm going to call a series of names, and as I do that, I would like to invite the following members, those of you in the front row, the Rio Grande Police Department Law Enforcement Explorer Post, to come forward. Now, if you would, I think we're going to line up here, and I hope there's some cameras in the audience because we're going to need them. All right, Jeremy Burns, Thomas Molnar, Chris Hall. Couldn't be with us this evening, but we're going to catch up with him. David Vernon, Madison Jeffries, Nicole Pennock, Michael Day, Kelsey Kessler, Timothy Kohler, and Harry Bennett. And we would also like, if you would please join us, to invite their advisors this evening, Senior Officer Michelle Cota, Senior Officer Michael Smiley, Officer Shane Day, and is Officer Jason Hendricks here this evening? No? Okay, how about John Mershon, Support Services Tech? Did he make it? Okay. All right. For those of you who are not familiar with our Law Enforcement Explorer Post, this is an organization that helps our youth gain insight into a variety of career programs. California Highway Patrol, Los Angeles County Sheriff, LAPD, and the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department. There were 14 police-related career-related police events, such as handling domestic violence calls, medical emergencies, traffic stops, and high-risk felony car stops. These are just to name a few. And our Arroyo Grande Police Department post, and this is a quote, which you'll probably read in the newspaper, shocked the competition with first-place wins in the domestic violence and medical scenarios, second place in the felony car stop scenario, and third place in the nighttime traffic stop and DUI stop competition. Our post brought home 9 overall trophies, and when the final tabulation was complete, they were recognized with a first place overall top honor. I want to make sure the camera gets a shot of this, if you can. This is something that we want to make sure we get a picture of. You can work on that while I go on here. Anyway, I just wanted to let all of you know how very proud we are, and grateful also to your advisors for their time and effort in devoting their time and energy to you and preparing you for this competition. So on behalf of the citizens of Arroyo Grande, our community, and certainly the members of the council, it's my pleasure to present you, each of you, with a mayor's commendation, and I will hand it out, and I hope I have these in the right order. Well, I still can't get over that. Look at those trophies. That is something. Something to behold. Okay, we're going to move on to item number 6, agenda review. 6A is move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption this evening be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to come forward on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you be mindful of the 3-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole. And once again, this is your opportunity to come forward items not published on this evening's agenda. Anyone? We will close community comments and suggestions, and we'll move to the consent agenda. For those of you who are following along on our agenda this evening, we have consent items 8A through, we have a lot of them, 8O. This is also an opportunity for those of you who have had a chance to look at any of those consent items, members of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on any of the items on consent. Just for background, very quickly, you understand that these are items that the council normally approves in one action unless there is a certain item in consent that an individual member of council would want to pull for separate action or further discussion or clarification. Any member of the audience who would like to come forward on any of the items on consent? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda, and we'll come back to the council. What is the will of the council? Any items to pull this evening? Okay, we have no items to pull. All right, moving along, that takes us to item 9, our public hearings. Item 9A is consideration and preliminary approval of our community development block grant projects for year 2008. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. Tonight we're going to talk about preliminary approval and direction for community development block grants for the year 2008. A little background on the program. As you know, community development block grants is a federal program which distributes funds to cities and counties. Allocation of these funds can be made for a variety of projects as long as they meet one of the national objectives: either benefit low or moderate income persons, aid in the prevention or elimination of slums and blight, or address urgent community development needs that pose serious or immediate threat to the public health or welfare. This year, HUD estimates that the city will have approximately $108,000 in CDBG funds, which will be available at the fall of 2008. And this estimate is equal to the final adjusted figure that we received for 2007. On the board behind me is a pretty complex chart, but we may refer to that in the future discussion here tonight. The first order of business is public services. As you know, these services are capped at a maximum of 15% of allocated funds. This year, the requests for these funds were very competitive. We had over $28,000 in request, and it looks like there's just a little over $16,000 available for these important public services in our community. In an effort to propose fair distribution of these funds, staff developed some additional criteria to use as a guide when determining how much money goes to which project. Basically, priority in funding was given to programs that best balanced between these following criteria. We looked for projects that provided the most basic of human needs, such as housing, clothing, food, urgent medical care. We also did a moderate category in that for non-urgent medical care but important medical programs. We looked at programs and how many residents of Arroyo Grande did they serve overall. We looked at projects that showed a demonstrated need for importance to a drastic shortfall in their budget. We also looked at projects that served the people at a county level, but there's no local services in Arroyo Grande or the Five Cities area. And then lastly, we looked at programs that have in the past spent their money timely and efficiently. So on the board behind me, I tried to break down that complicated chart into just public services. Maybe it's a little bit more readable, and as you discuss this, we can come back to this chart. I won't highlight any at this point. I'll wait for your questions or your comments. The remaining funding, what's left from public services, include public facilities, funds for economic development, funds to eliminate the slums and blight, and then administration of the project. We allocating about $50,000 for ADA improvements throughout the city. These are for sidewalks, the curb cuts, and this would be used consistent with our new sidewalk plan that has been adopted or will be adopted shortly. We look at $5,000 for the Small Business Development Center, which will continue their efforts to help small businesses stay in Arroyo Grande and enlarge. For elimination of slums and blight, we're continuing a modest $10,000 for facade grants, approximately $6,400 for a new group, Arroyo Grande and Bloom, that does beautification efforts in the city. We're keeping with our same funding from last year for code enforcement of $15,948. And staff is also recommending that we keep our administration at the 20% maximum cap, and that's a little over $21,000. With these comments, staff recommends that the council provide preliminary approval of the proposed projects to be funded with the 2008 CDBG funds. And just for clarification, staff will return at the beginning of 2008 for the final allocation of these funds. So with that, I can answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Any questions or clarifications on the staff report? No? Okay. This is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Wow. It's the first time I think we've not had some speakers from the agencies that we've allotted money to. Okay, we will close the public.
Take away from some of the others to make that, but I do think that although it is outside of our community, that's probably a good direction. The one, and maybe this is a comment and a question, I didn't quite understand exactly what the Housing Authority in San Luis Obispo was looking for with their $50,000. So
they were asking large sums of money from each city and also the county to build a office facility and also a maintenance facility. And talked with county, and they were had a few questions about the ability for this project to be funded through CDBG grants. So that's the reason for recommending no money to be allocated to that project.
I appreciate that explanation. Thank you.
We've also surveyed the other cities, and at this point, we don't know of any other that are allocating funding. Although a couple, two or three, still haven't developed the recommendations yet, but majority are not.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
It's always difficult to piece out the limited dollars we have to the numerous public entities that come forward and look for assistance. I appreciate the work that the staff puts in to try to determine an equitable distribution of it. I have no problems with supporting the recommendations you've made to us. Thank you for the work in putting it together.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to actually say I really like this priority chart that you did this time. It's helpful to understand that how we are actually making these judgment calls, because I know that there's a lot of people that probably see one person got cut and not quite understand what went in the work behind it. And so I think that's very useful, and I can support the recommendations as proposed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I, too, can support this. I'm particularly pleased that, Jim, you and whoever else helped you with this, I don't know if this was all yours or not, but I think laying out the criteria the way you did is extremely helpful for all the reasons the Mayor Pro Tem indicated. And also, as Councilmember Guthrie indicated, some of that, some of the criteria leads us to support services or organizations that aren't actually within the city, but certainly do serve our citizens. And I think that's a very important clarification to make. So, again, I'm very happy with the way the distribution was made, and I can support this as well. Any other comments? Okay, if not.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve staff's recommendations for the community development block grant projects for the year 2008.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
And do you want to note for the record that Councilmember Fellows arrived at 7, I can't read the clock.
38.
7:38. Thank you.
You might also note that Councilmember Guthrie made an attempt to confuse me, but that's okay. We'll let it go.
Yeah, we will mention that.
In that case.
That's not hard to do these days. Okay, Councilmember Fellows is back with us. And that will take us to our second public hearing this evening, 9B, consideration of plot plan review case number 06-009.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The project site is about a third of an acre in size and is located at the corner of East Cherry Avenue and Lyerly Lane within subarea 2 of the East Village neighborhood plan. As a brief history, the Planning Commission approved a proposal in June of this year to remove an existing residence and accessory structures and then construct a new 1,881 square foot residence with garage and workshop located further back on the project site. Council considered the project in August on an appeal and tentatively denied the project based on concerns of the size of the proposed residence and then also its location within the agricultural buffer. Then on September 11th, Council continued the project in order for the applicant to return with a revised project. Based on concerns from Council and the neighbor located north of the project site, the project has been substantially revised from what the Planning Commission approved. The revised project includes a smaller replacement house by about 280 square feet, which has been moved further away from the neighboring property and Lyerly Lane to allow more separation from the neighbor's property and preserve the view of the agricultural land to the south. Also changed is the height of the fence from 6 feet to 4 feet. That was per the neighbor's request. So with total 9 feet, this was accomplished by designing the house basically to be narrower. This slide just shows the new floor plan. So the land use designation and zoning of the property is single-family residential. The project meets all development code requirements for the SF district. The development code states that properties adjacent to agricultural land shall have a 100-foot wide buffer measured from the edge of designated agricultural district and shall include a 20-foot wide landscape transitional area. Given the close proximity of the project site to agricultural operations, almost all of the property is located within the city-designated agricultural buffer. The project includes a 30-foot-wide landscape strip along the southern boundary, and that is 15 feet wider than what the code requires. The primary purpose of the buffer is to create distance and screening between residential and agricultural uses to avoid negative economic impacts of the agricultural activities and to minimize general health, safety, and welfare impacts for neighboring residential uses. However, when applying the buffer policy to the subject property, it is not considered a prohibition on residential uses. The development code indicates that no new residential use shall be permitted within the buffer area unless it is determined that there could be no other economically viable use of the property. So in this case, the property is zoned for residential use, has historically had a residential structure on the site, and there is no other economically viable use for the property. The development code does not address the situation of demolishing an existing house and rebuilding on the same site within the agricultural buffer. Therefore, policy interpretation by council is necessary to consider this particular project application. Staff's interpretation of the development code is that the project would not be precluded since it increases both the existing buffer area and landscape screening, and preservation of the entire buffer cannot be achieved without eliminating economically viable use of the property. So therefore, staff believes the only feasible expectation is to increase the distance between the two uses and enhance the existing buffer, which will decrease the nonconformity. Staff's opinion regarding drainage, stormwater currently flows from the project site across the adjacent property to the west towards Myrtle Street. Based on preliminary drainage studies, the proposed drainage solution is to retain stormwater on site in a drainage basin, which is shown on the screen. The proposed basin is located within the 35-foot wide landscape strip. As I already mentioned, the neighboring property owner has expressed concerns regarding proximity of the proposed structure immediately adjacent to her property. The location of the structure was proposed to maximize the size of the buffer and landscape area. However, the applicant has since adjusted the location of the structure on the site per the neighbor's request. East Cherry Avenue is proposed to be widened from the existing 16 feet to 24 feet along the property boundary. Right-of-way required is 25 feet with sidewalk. With sidewalk, right-of-way required would be 32 feet. The project is conditioned to put in curb, gutter, and sidewalk along East Cherry. A 6-foot-wide public utility easement beyond the right-of-way for utility conduits and boxes behind the curb would also be required on the north side of that street. The Lyerly Lane easement, which is owned by the applicant, is currently just 8 feet wide. An additional 13 feet is necessary to improve the private street to 21 feet wide, including curb and gutter, but no sidewalk. A 6-foot-wide public utility easement beyond the right-of-way for utility conduits and boxes behind the curb would be required on the west side of this private street. Staff has prepared a resolution with draft conditions for the council's consideration. Special conditions have been added to ensure that landscaping within the agricultural buffer is developed and maintained. Condition number 44 has been amended to state prior to issuance of a certificate of occupancy rather than prior to issuance of building permit, and that's regarding when public utilities shall be operational. That just makes sense. Condition number 47 and mitigation measure 12.1 have also been modified to state that Lyerly Lane shall taper to the east prior to the property boundary, consistent with the approved East Village neighborhood conceptual plan. This slide shows what the tapering of Lyerly Lane would look like. Although improving the overall appearance of the property and the neighborhood. The proposed replacement house is smaller than the original submittal and therefore closer to the existing square footage of living space on the site. And then finally, the replacement house is located further from the adjacent residence to the north, yet maintains the same distance from agricultural operations and allows an improved view of the agricultural land for the neighboring property. Regarding disadvantages, we had one. The proposed replacement house is still 500 square feet larger than the existing square footage of living space on the site. The increase in living space could intensify the use and occupancy within the agricultural buffer. So, in conclusion, it is recommended the City Council adopt a resolution approving plot plan review case number 06-009. And as always, we have alternatives. You can do as recommended, or you can modify the resolution as appropriate and approve the project, take tentative action to deny the project, and direct staff to prepare a resolution for final action, and then, as always, provide other direction to staff. So that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer questions.
Okay. Questions or clarifications on the staff report only at this time? Anything? Okay. Then I think what we'll do is go ahead and open the public hearing, and we'll ask the applicant to come forward. Mark, do you have anything you would like to add?
Members of the council, Mark Vasquez, the representative for the applicant. I don't have much to add. Kelly's gone over it well in the staff report. I just wanted to say that based on the comments that we got at the last hearing, we've made some changes, tried to work with staff and the neighboring property owner and come up with a project that hopefully we will find acceptable for this property. I'd be happy to answer any questions as to how we ended up where we're at with the design, if that would be.
Okay. Well, while you're at the podium, I do have a question. And this was some last minute activity that took place, and you clarified, I think, some of it, Kelly, about the Lyerly Lane and the easement. Did that get somewhat resolved this afternoon?
Prior to issuance of building permits.
Prior to issuing the building permit. Okay. All right. Any other questions or clarifications while Mark is at the podium? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, we'll go ahead and open it up for general comment. This is a public hearing. Any other members of the audience that would like to come forward? This is an opportunity to do so.
Hi, Colleen Martin, 855 Olive Street, and I am representing my mother, Lynn Titus, at 404 Lyerly Lane, who is the neighbor. First off, thank you for examining all these planning issues so carefully and re-examining this one many, many times. I shared some concerns late in the day with staff, and I was really grateful that the city manager came over to the site to look at and see our concerns, which concluded with the tapering that's not on your original plans of Lyerly Lane, because I sat there and I realized that you're going to have a dead-end sidewalk about 12 feet in on, that would meet about 12 feet in on my mother's property, and I realized that would set a pretty heavy precedence as to where the road would go. The road currently is owned by Tony Janowitz, and it's only 8 feet. The road that's being currently used is probably 12 feet wide, and it's on a mixture of people's property, mostly rural Estes's and Tony's. So when a dedicated city street occurs there someday, 21 feet wide, it is really important that the placement there take advantage of looking at the setbacks of the current homes that are already there, because there's two homes on opposite sides of the street that make it that the street needs to kind of wind around so you're not having the road be right in their front door. There's a couple issues I've had, and one of them I brought up before, and I just want something for you to think about with this project and any other project where you're bonding for future improvements. There seems to be no trigger for the road improvements or the reassessing of the bond for the improvements in the case that the Cherry Creek improvements are not acted upon in a timely manner. If the bond will stay with the owner of Lyerly Lane, which I assume it will, even if the house is sold, then what would force those improvements to occur without the construction of the Cherry Creek improvement? So if Cherry Creek ends up lagging and not being built for 5 years, does the bond just stay in place? Because the price of bonding throughout our city, and if it's 10 years old, the amount we've bonded for is inadequate, clearly. So it's something, especially because there's a good chance this property will be sold. And so what happens with those improvements? Already, Kelly did correct herself from the staff report, and I wanted to correct the staff report, too, that on page 96-6, on the lower page, pagination, on the third paragraph, starting with the words sentence, the Lyerly Lane easement. It says, the Lyerly Lane easement adjacent to the project site, which is partly owned by the applicant, is currently 8 feet wide. It's solely owned by the applicant, and I want to make that very clear. I've looked at the deed, and in 1892, that 8 feet was dedicated, and Mr. Estes owns his property up to 8 feet, and Mrs. Titus owns 8 feet up to that point, and Mr. Janowitz owns the 8 feet. So to widen the road to 21 feet, the owner of the road is going to have to get negotiations to purchase property from other property owners in some area too, right? Okay. And then I did notice the disadvantages, the increase in the living space may intensify the use and occupancy within the agricultural buffer. All in all, we think the project will make the neighborhood look better. We've just wanted, you know, adequate parking and the road and some of the things that are out there now to stay, which is the quiet neighborhood and the views. The one question I did have, because there were a lot of vague adjectives throughout the staff report that were really unquantifiable, and that was on question number 4 on page 9612 under the general conditions, which I assume is a template you use for all your conditions of approval. And what it says is, development shall occur in substantial conformance with the plans presented to the City Council tonight, is basically what it says. And I just want to know what's considered substantial conformance. Like the square footage would remain the same, the plot plan would remain the same. I don't care if they change between linoleum and tile, but as far as basically the footprint would remain the same. I'm concerned because on page 96.5, the third paragraph down, it says, therefore, a modest increase in size to a replacement structure would appear to be consistent with that of the direction. Well, the 500 feet, even going from the expanded 1,100 square foot screw straight across, that would only leave her about 11 feet from the curb and gutter to her front door, which wouldn't be adequate in any project you would approve. So, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward on this item? Okay. Seeing none. Last chance.
Hi, my name is Tony Janowitz, and I am the owner of the property at 795 Cherry Street. And I would just like to say that over the past year and a half that we've been looking at this project, I would like to say that I appreciate all the knowledge and effort that you have put into trying to make this property work out. I realize it's a difficult property, and I think that we have done our best, both myself and with a few items that the neighbors have brought up. We have tried to make this a workable neighborhood, and it will be a beautiful place. It will work out with the neighborhood, and I just appreciate all the time and effort that staff, City Council, and the neighbors have put into it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We'll close the public hearing portion of this item and bring this back to the council. And we'll start with Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think I made it clear when we had this project in the forest earlier that if I had my brothers, there wouldn't be a house here, but that's not practical. It would not be legal. So what I see before us is an improvement to the plans that were presented earlier to take most of the issues into consideration. I don't look at this. Excuse me, mic's off. I do not look at this as a precedent for someone that wants to build a home in our ag buffer. I think this is a unique case, a unique circumstance. And in light of that, what I think we have here is the best use of property given the constraints we have to work within. However, being trying to be attentive to the points raised by...
It's required to be improved immediately. If it's bonded for the jurisdiction over when the timing of the improvement really falls on the Public Works Director, which is set forth in Condition 65, which says that all essential project improvements should be constructed prior to occupancy. Non-essential improvements guaranteed by agreement and financial securities may be constructed after occupancy as directed by the Public Works Director. And then there are a number of other conditions that bear on bonding and how bonding actually works. And at least from my perspective, this is not the first time we've bonded or accepted bonds for an improvement, and the conditions do adequately protect both the city, the neighbor, and the applicant.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Then I guess summing things up, I think that we've got perhaps the best compromise possible in terms of dealing with this piece of property. Demolition and replacement is probably the best solution here. If we were to try to improve the existing house, it would be sitting right on top of the road. It would be much closer to the ag production itself. So all things being equal, I think that we've come to the best resolution we can in terms of this, and I can support going forward with the project as submitted tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fellows.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do have a couple of questions, or rather I'd like to hear staff's response to Mrs. Martin's printed and spoken comments. I think the city attorney just covered number one, and the wording, I guess, from his comments, the wording suggested in bold italics are not necessary. How about, does staff agree with number two as far as Mrs. Martin's and Mrs. Titus's understanding of the road ownership, and also the questions regarding the last two paragraphs on this piece of paper?
I think number two is more of a statement than a question.
It is, and I wondered if at this point you found any fault with it, or if you generally agree with it, or you just need more time to think about it, look at it.
Dozens of times. It means substantially compliant, substantially similar to, and there's no bright line. It is a subjective term. It means different things to different people, but more times than not, you'll know when substantial compliance occurs. I think Mayor Ferrara has extensive experience with this particular issue. And candidly, there are times where people disagree on whether substantial conformance has been achieved. I think in this particular instance, everyone's going to be attuned to the issue. So we're going to expect a little bit more than substantial conformance, probably actual conformance.
Good. Thank you. And then lastly, the tapering, this new sketch of the of Lyerly Lane, that will be part of the final paperwork plan.
And just to reiterate, we've modified Condition 47 and Mitigation Measure 12.1. You'll see that. Well, I don't have the page. That would be on page 9B17. The first bullet point directly below the condition now reads: 20-foot street width from curb to curb, tapering to the east prior to the property boundary as per the approved East Village Neighborhood Conceptual Plan, which essentially is what you see up there. So they're now part of the conditions. That the same change was made to 12.1, the mitigation measure.
All right. Thank you for that. Okay, my comments.
I would recommend that you refer to those modifications in your motion.
Okay.
To make clear that those are part of the final approval.
My first comment is in response to, or is in reference to, staff's quick response to Mrs. Martin's and Mrs. Titus's concerns, meeting with them immediately. I know there are plenty of cities in this state and across the United States where the response would be not that positive, and I sure appreciate that. Same thing with Mrs. Dunbar, who came in and spoke, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and the response is just super. I think we've got a great staff in that regard. What I like about the project, as it's finally been worked out, is it's further back from the ag operations, but that's a good thing. I think there's a pretty good chance of having a good ag buffer there, even though I have concerns about that I'll mention in a moment regarding what's called the ag buffer plan or whatever this one-page thing is. I appreciate the fact that the applicant and his architect have worked with the neighbors to regarding her view and made changes there. I think that's a wonderful compromise. Also, the Dixon Ranch operation owners' concerns regarding a no-climb fence and the road width and so on have been dealt with and have been made conditions of approval from the ag operations in the existing house. That's certainly true. I do have a little concern with the fact that, no, actually I share the concern with all my colleagues up here that there's going to be a house in the ag buffer, but the fact of the matter is there's going to be a house in the ag buffer. Changes have been made to the size of it and the configuration of it and the access to it. Rather than having a big hole in the ag buffer, the access to the house is going to be off of Lyerly Lane. I go on to my concerns. Is it far enough away to mitigate for the fact that the house is larger? I'm not 100% satisfied with that, but I have the feeling that we're at a point where it's as good as it's going to get. I also went out today and just to confirm the fact that that second unit, which in the past I've said wasn't habitable, is actually inhabited, and I measured it and I actually came out with a little bit larger size than the staff did, so I'm satisfied that the house that's being replaced or the structure that's being replaced is actually 1,100 square feet, maybe even 1,150 or so. And so what used to be 135% larger home than the one that's being replaced now, in my mind, is more like a 40% larger home. And I think, again, that's about as good as we're going to get. I would like to see, or at least hear some discussion regarding, I can find this here, 9B6. On 9B6 is the mitigation measure 2.2, where it mentions that the final landscape plan of the buffer shall be consistent with the landscape ag buffer plan prepared by FIRMA. This is a question for staff. This, to me, is not an adequate ag buffer, not a perfect, yeah, wait a minute, it's not a fully formed ag buffer plan, and I would like to see more input. I know it's going back to the ARC. I would like to make sure that somebody that has experience with ag buffers, with plants for ag buffers, is brought in by the applicant to make sure that ag buffer is the best we can possibly get, the landscaping of it. I appreciate the fact that there will be a drainage swale there, a bioswale, and that's a good thing. And I think, oh, it was brought to my attention, I was reminded that in that garage on the portion of the property that's closest to dirt cherry, there's a lube pit where a person used to be able to stand and release the oil, change the oil in cars and so on. And I want to make sure that we deal with the fact that there may be toxics. There probably are toxics.
As I said last time, I do think we have while it isn't what I would consider an adequate buffer, it certainly is substantially better than it is today for a whole number of reasons. We've certainly established it's an engineered buffer. We've also established for its long-term maintenance that it'll stay there, which is certainly one of my key concerns. I do think it's a plus that we, in fact, see some sort of guidance, if not a precedence, on what happens when we see the expansion of a building, of a residential structure inside the agricultural buffer here, that it's not just an endless number that you can build as big a home as you could build anywhere, but that in fact it is similar to a legally non-conforming structure and that we have some sort of guidance on what you can do with those. So I think that's been the plus of the appeal. And based on that, I don't have any trouble going forward this evening with supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I think I was the only one that actually supported the previous home, so considering we're smaller, I can definitely support this tonight. I will note that we've had kind of push and pull on one issue, and that is there's some who would like to see the ag buffer increased, and yet there's also some wish to pull the home farther away from the adjacent home. And I think those two forces have actually worked very difficultly together. And so at this point, we do have a very narrow home. I don't think realistically to make it any smaller would be feasible or fair. And in all likelihood, I think it would have been actually reasonable to allow the home to be closer to the adjacent property as would be anywhere else in the city. So With that said, I think the applicant has done a good job of trying to work with all these different and in many cases conflicting desires, and has created a home that I think is actually a sellable home, which is actually, we don't want to just see a home built there and then sit empty. So it's definitely going to be a major improvement for that corner. The home there is very old and worn out, and also it would obviously be right against the road if it was ever widened. So I can support this with the staff recommendations as proposed. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm much more comfortable with the clarifications made this evening, and I, too, want to support what Councilmember Fellows noted, and that was the quick response of staff going out there. And also want to thank you, Colleen, and your mom for being vigilant of the distance between the two homes. And also, in some way, with the landscape, with the fence that separates the two properties, in some way, perhaps working towards a sense of openness so that, you know, you're not, both occupants are not staring at a fence, but can, in fact, look across the properties at perhaps some of the ag fields. And then the other concern, obviously, the the term that the city attorney brought up, and which I've been trying for the last 9 to 10 years to suppress. So thank you for that, Tim. I've had nightmares about the two words, substantial conformance. But and I would have to agree, it truly is a subjective term, and it can be interpreted in a number of different ways. And so I think in terms of the concerns of the neighbors in this particular issue, the two critical issues are the size of the home and the proximity to their home, and that's substantial conformance. I'm interpreting this for the record to mean that if there are changes, they might well be to the interior of the home, a different placement of a particular room, a different sizing of the room, whatever the case may be, but the footprint itself would remain in its current location. That's how I'm in interpreting substantial versus straight conformance. So I'm hopeful that that's the way staff is interpreting this as well. I think as well the critical pieces of this is in fact the size of the home as it exists right now as proposed, and the distance between this particular structure and the neighboring structure. I don't often disagree with the mayor pro tem, but this is one of those times, and that is that reference to this particular area as, quote, I think you said, any other part of the city in terms of spacing. This isn't any other part of the city. This is our rural-urban interface, and one of the things that we've been trying to do throughout this process is maintain an urban feel, or a rural feel, I should say. As much space between properties is what we're looking for here, as much as we can possibly muster. I would venture to guess that as properties develop in sub-area 2, that you're not going to find them as close together as you would find in perhaps other parts of the city. In the soils issue, I know that there's been some discussion out there about the condition of the soil for a couple of different reasons. So I noticed in the staff report that there was reference made to a soils report. I don't know if that's just the geology of the soil or if it is, in fact, going to be some analysis done by health services or whoever does this. But certainly if there is contaminated soil, that's going to have to be treated differently than the others when grading occurs. So we don't have to look too far in this county to see those kinds of situations. And I think it has to go to a Class 2 landfill. And in Class 2 or Class 1, I can't recall, but it has to be treated with special care. With all that, I'm very pleased that we got the road issue mapped out, and I think Ms. Martin indicated that certainly in our motion and the other modifications that have been made this morning in our motion, we need to embody those changes so that we refer to the map that was recently revised this evening, not the one we have in our staff report. With all of that, I can move forward with this project and support it as well. So with that, if there's nothing further, is there a motion? Anyone want to try a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving plot plan review case 06-009 for a property located at 795 East Cherry Avenue, applied for by Tony Janowitz, with the modifications of the staff. And can you actually tell me which item numbers you wanted noted for the record?
It was changes to conditions of approval number 44, 47, and mitigation measure 12.1.
And then, and that embodies the map that we were showed tonight that includes the tapering as well.
That would be something separate. I think you should just make that as part of your motion to swap out that map for the final resolution.
Actually, I think by reference to the East Village neighborhood plan, it incorporates the exact same design, so I'm not sure that's necessary.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Okay, and I'll just say that we substitute the map that was displayed tonight. That's my motion.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I just have a question regarding what mitigation...
particular conditions stating that there shall be an analysis of the soil with regards to any potential contaminants and review by County Health Department.
In that particular area, if it's okay with the motion maker.
Yeah, submit a preliminary soils report prepared by a registered civil engineer and supported by adequate test borings. All earthwork design and grading shall be performed in accordance with the approved soils report.
That sounds like a typical...
Yeah, that deals with the geology, and I think if we can just embellish that point to also include wording that deals with a health department analysis for contaminated soils to be treated accordingly. Okay. That'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we, would that be okay with the motion maker?
That's fine.
It holds with a second.
All right. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to 9C. Consideration of General Plan Amendment, case number 06-003, Amendment of the General Plan Land Use Map. Good evening, Teresa.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight's item is both a proposed general plan amendment and a proposed development code amendment that apply to two different and distinct neighborhoods in the city of Arroyo Grande. The first one is in the vicinity of Halcyon Road near Fair Oaks, across from the Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, and the second one is in the vicinity of Elm Street near Poplar. As a little bit of background, these proposals, so the general plan amendment and the zoning proposals, are being brought together in an umbrella general plan amendment because one includes a technical down zone and one includes an up zone. And we're always a potential of 25 dwelling units per acre. It is surrounded by office mixed use and multifamily and some single family, and it is also across the street from Margaret Harlow Elementary School. This is also in the city's redevelopment area. We have had some inquiries over the past year or so in regards to this project area. There's been some change in property. There's been some interest in terms of the medical community wanting to be able to open medical offices near the hospital. And again, it's very underdeveloped in terms of its potential density. So the proposal for you tonight is to amend the general plan land use map as well as a zoning map for the for five properties in the project area on this northwest corner of Fair Oaks and South Halcyon, and change it from multifamily very high density to office mixed use. And I'll just make a note in terms of land use labels under the general plan and under the zoning. The general plan generally has more generalized land use designations, and the zoning usually is much more specific. In this case, they both kind of match up, so it seems redundant, but we have to make sure that we are amending the general plan land use map to match the same density potential as a city zoning map and make sure they're consistent. So I'll be repeating multifamily very high density and saying it a little different for the zoning, and that's just because they have different labels for the same land use. So this is down zoning from 25 dwelling units per acre to either 15 or 20 dwelling units per acre, depending on if a project comes in with only residential or mixed use. And so this was both the general plan land use map and the zoning map essentially would look like, instead of having a project area there at the corner zoned that at that 25 dwelling units per acre, it would match the office mixed use zoning in the vicinity. Some issues brought up regarding this portion of the proposal included the concerns related to require that only houses are across from Margaret Harlow Elementary School. We looked at maybe not upzone or downzoning it to OMU, but changing it to multifamily apartment, which matches the zoning on the backside of the property to the east. But in the discussion, it was decided that we're kind of dealing with some unknowns. There's a lot of flexibility and a lot of different design potential for this project site. And we would expect to see commercial properties develop on South Halcyon, and if it's a mixed-use project, some residential in the back portion of the site. And that is going to be a discretionary project, whatever that project may be in the future. And that mix of uses and location of uses can be evaluated at that time. So the Planning Commission recommended the proposal before you to zone the property for office mixed use. And now I'll switch to the vicinity of Elm Street and Poplar Street. Also during the last past year, we were updating the development code in terms of our residential districts and looking at areas that were inconsistent with our general plan, and this was not one of them. However, during public comment, Mr. Ropeshotti spoke in terms of the zoning for the east side of Elm Street near Poplar, and it is currently zoned single-family, 4.5 dwelling units per acre. It is surrounded by mixed use to the north. It is across the street from multifamily, and it is has some apartments built and zoned immediately to the south of it. It backs up to a single family. It is also includes the project area that was evaluated in the housing element update, and it was targeted as an area for a potential infill housing. This is the project area. It includes 13 single-family residential designated properties, although there are two of the properties currently developed with multifamily units. It is just north of the Wyndham per acre to multifamily, 9 dwelling units per acre, and this does allow for multifamily attached or small lot single family detached residences. And this proposal, if approved, would have this effect on the zoning and general plan land use maps. You can see how it would match then the zoning across the street to the east of Elm Street. Staff did prepare a mitigated neg deck for the project. There was public comment made during the hearings by either the applicant or the landowner in the case of the Halcyon Road properties. There was some concern on the Elm Street area by neighbors fronting Aspen that they would be backed up to an area that would can potentially be more intensely built in the future and what that would mean to their setbacks and so forth. This was addressed in terms of the fact that second units can already be built there. Those lot sizes could all accommodate a second unit. And that was about it on the public comment. So with that, the Planning Commission recommended that the City Council would adopt the proposed resolution to amend the general plan and introduce a proposed ordinance to amend the zoning map for the City of Arroyo Grande. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is that it, Teresa?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Did you want to note the change of the language?
Yes, thank you.
Word change?
The word change on the proposed ordinance should read.
Just multifamily instead of multifamily apartment.
Just right at the very end of the title, it should refer to a change from single-family residential to multifamily.
Right.
Period.
Got it.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Questions, clarifications in the staff report? Councilmember Guthrie?
Can you put back up the photograph you showed? Two units. Of course, this is the, I believe this is self-help housing, which I understand had a density bonus as well. But there's also a condo or apartment project here and here, and also some small units here that at least appear to be, when you look at them, I mean, look at how developed this is. It's almost solid building here on this lot that at least appear to be higher density than that. Do you have any idea what the density there is?
I didn't determine the actual built density there because it was quite some time ago. But the property extends much further. The property is almost two acres, I believe. And that density is probably pretty close to 9, and with a couple more units for affordable housing. It does look pretty intensely built, but if it's over, it's not over by a whole lot.
And finally, just for the record, there are two quadruplexes, which I assume are legally nonconforming now and would be legally nonconforming in the future as well.
They'd be more conforming with the proposed ordinance, but just under by 0.2 of an acre.
But would they be substantially conforming?
I'll let Tim answer that.
Okay. And then can you put back up the slide that showed the zoning over on Halcyon, kind of the bigger zoning picture that showed the hospital and everything? Yeah. Oops, that's it right there. So just to clarify for me, this square is this square right here. Mm-hmm. Okay. And going on down Halcyon, the office mixed-use designation goes on down Halcyon here for some distance, doesn't it?
That's correct.
Okay.
So there's all the way to Grand.
So in this area, there's actually quite a bit of office mixed-use that's both developed and undeveloped in this area already, plus the area behind the hospital and the area behind the laser surgery center.
That's correct.
All right, just to clarify, thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Fellows.
Yeah, Teresa, Councilman Guthrie requested and you provided the list of the folks that were notified of the potential changes. I don't have that list with me, but with all of those notifications that went out, there were did you say just one person, or was that one person someone who spoke here last time, and there were no public comments in response to those notifications?
The notifications included the 300 feet radius from the project area, and the public comment.
Are we dealing with a calendar year in terms of this, or do we use fiscal year?
Calendar year.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications on the staff report? Okay. This is a public hearing, and at this time I would like to invite any member of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on 9C. Once again, please be mindful of the three-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole.
Hey, I came on the right night. I just happened to live at Halcyon and Fair Oaks, and I do think it's a really good idea, and I do think when a specific project comes forward, there will be a lot of concerns regarding the traffic, which we already have so many concerns regarding pedestrian traffic at that intersection. It's crazy. The other thing is I've walked that section from Wyndham to Grand Avenue probably 400 times because for 2 years I walked elderly people up to Grand Avenue and back, so I know every property along the line. And the only concern I have is on the other side of the street, not the side of the street you're talking about, the other side of the street, you have a real big road improvement you need to do because you have a brick fence right next to the lane and you don't have sidewalks, curbs, and gutters on the other side of the street in some portions. And then you also have on that same side of the street, across the street, you have the senior housing, the first senior housing project we put in. I forget the name of it. It starts with a C. Way a little bit lower on Elm Street. So when those people with the walkers want to walk up to the grocery store, they don't have a sidewalk to walk on. It's a real problem, especially at the corner of Elm and Ash. Yeah, you got it. You live in the neighborhood, Jim. You know what I'm talking about. So as long as, when you're looking at that, it's got to be an area that's targeted because you have too many pedestrians walking up to that center for their basic needs. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Council staff, Dave Robichotti, 178 South Elm Street. I've been up here a few times on this project. Without really going over what Therese had said, in the years that I have lived there, and especially in this last boom, I witnessed all the areas around South Elm grow or improve. We had new units, new church. We had a lot of improvements on older residences. But on that west side of South Elm, it is one of the last affordable areas in Arroyo Grande. And it's just a good opportunity to do it now instead of pass it on to the next council and the next staff. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else would like to come forward? Going once, going twice. Okay. Close the public hearing portion of 9C and bring this back and let's see. Councilmember Fellows, why don't you start us off?
I'll be brief. Both of these proposals make good sense to me. It makes good sense to me, too, and I think it's good planning on Elm Street, on South Elm, to have similar zonings on both sides of the street. And down on Halcyon, I've listened to the arguments and the reasoning regarding that area being more medically oriented, and I like both the proposal. I can support the proposal that includes both those rezones.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I guess I'll take a slightly different approach here. I mean, I usually am and certainly would agree that on the face of it, both of these rezones, certainly I don't have any strong objection to. I have some problem with the way they're coming forward. We're making a general plan amendment, which is basically project-driven, and they're very small projects, rather than really making a planning decision about what's best to happen in these areas. I'll point out a couple things. I mean, in reality, yes, it may very well be that this is absolutely an appropriate area for higher density, but it may even be more appropriate for even higher density than this, given what we're expecting to do on Elm Street. And given the lot size that we have here, I want to point out that while it reflects the lot size on the other side, these are actually, I mean, reflects the zoning. These are actually much bigger lots, and we're able to develop what we would call the courtyard-type homes like we see. In reality, what I think we're going to see here are going to be flag lots, because they're going to be single lots split in half, because there's none of the lots are big enough, or even putting together two of them, to do a substantial project, a PUD like we've seen in other sections. So I guess I really would like to see us go back and look at this rezoning, but actually look at it in a much more comprehensive manner. Look at rezoning. If we think this is an area that Elm Street is an area that's appropriate for higher density, we really should be looking at a much more comprehensive look rather than this really micro look, which is really driven by the potential redevelopment of only a couple, two or three of these lots in this area. I have a similar issue with the rezoning over on Fair Oaks and Halcyon, and that it's all don't have real strong feelings about it, even though it sounds like it, because there's nothing really wrong with them. But I really think that the downside of doing this is that it puts off the potential to take a much more comprehensive look at it later. And I do think in the next couple of years that we will be taking a look at it, but we may have limited our ability to do something more substantial or significantly better planning if, in fact, we take action tonight on a relatively small change, when actually a more comprehensive change might be more might be a better choice. So those are my comments. I'm certainly open to being convinced, because there's nothing really wrong with these, but I do think that there's a better solution, a much more comprehensive look at it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got no particular objections to what I see in front of us tonight. I might be inclined to support in terms of the issue on South Halcyon and Fair Oaks if we put in some sort of language to address the issue of the properties that face Harlow Elementary in terms of making sure that the residential components are front on the Fair Oaks side of the property there. But I don't have any major heartburn with this, and I suppose if something bigger comes along in a couple of years, we'll reevaluate and we may end up zoning it even more densely than we are now. But I've got no objections to going forward tonight.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're all coming at this a little bit different way. While I agree that there's a lot of potential on Halcyon for medical development, I look at the Halcyon Fair Oaks corner as probably the key to the whole development. And in my mind, if that corner is redeveloped, you'll probably see more development along Halcyon continue. So I think that's actually probably going to be the catalyst to see more development. I would actually be opposed to requiring in any motion we were doing tonight to state that we want to see residential along Fair Oaks. I think we obviously will have the ability in the future, when we're looking at any individual project, to decide whether or not it's appropriate. But I wouldn't want to handcuff ourselves right now with any kind of restriction like that without knowing what the project's going to look like. As far as Elm Street goes, I kind of agree a little bit with Councilman Guthrie in that almost to take it all the way through to the adjacent street with the zoning to at least allow the ability to do a larger project. I think that's one of the problems we've seen in a lot of areas. And I know when I was in the Planning Commission, I actually tried to encourage consolidation of some of these smaller parcels to get better projects. And so that would be my only concern right now. And so I understand why these two projects are tied together, because we're actually going to lose a little bit of the density over on Halcyon. My preference tonight would be to support the Halcyon project, the plan, and not support the Elm Street until we actually maybe came up with a higher density, realizing that's not feasible. I'm almost inclined to maybe say let's postpone this and take a look at the viability of doing a higher density along Elm Street and taking it back to the adjacent neighborhood or adjacent street. I realize that there would be some issues that would have to be dealt with as far as any project that came forth would have to be mindful of the fact that now we are getting up against a single-family neighborhood. But again, just like we can be mindful of any project that came in next to Harlow, we could be mindful of a project that came in next to the neighborhood as well. So that would be my preference. I'm kind of open to see where we're going, but I have not heard any super strong consensus that we want to push this through tonight. So it might make some sense to take a little bit longer look at this, since we really are seriously going to probably be impacting the street for a very long term if any projects come forward fairly quickly after this rezoning. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. I can support this project going forward tonight with the following, well, maybe not conditions, but you could call them conditions. I agree with the Mayor Pro Tem. I agree with Councilmember Guthrie. I don't think that moving forward this evening, even though it embodies or entails a general plan amendment, is going to preclude us from taking a future longer look, more comprehensive look at this, even if it means we have to go back and modify what we're doing this evening. I would feel much safer doing that than I would perhaps not balancing things out in terms of the density issues. I think we run into some problems there in terms of our housing element and so on and so forth. So I don't have an issue with moving forward this evening. You know, the thought occurred to me, particularly we don't let one side go without doing the other. So I'm all in favor of taking a more comprehensive look at it. Maybe that's a planning challenge for this coming year. And we can certainly enlist some support, the same support we had for some of our other large-scale projects, if we wanted to bring in some Cal Poly folks or take a look at what an overlay might look for the entire area and come back with a game plan or at least a direction. And if that direction led us to perhaps modifying what we do this evening, I wouldn't have an issue with that at all. We have that ability. So I would much rather move forward with what we have this evening with the understanding that we would come back and take a more thorough look from a planning perspective, especially along Grand Avenue. And, of course, the other thing, too, Councilmember Fellows indicated that we didn't have much of a response from the public on the notice. But I do suspect that, particularly in that area across from Harlow Elementary, that when a project does come forward, we want to make sure Lucia Marr's involved in this. And, in fact, maybe not just a routine notification, maybe a letter of invite to make sure that both the superintendent and probably the principal at Harlow are involved, even in some of the preliminary discussions, because that might shape what is submitted before it even gets to us. And that would be a good thing if we could head that off and have everybody together at least as much as possible before it got in here. So, with that, I can support what we're doing tonight. It's not certainly – we're not putting a period on anything. We're simply moving in what I think is a fairly good direction. And if it's not comprehensive enough, we can fix that in the future. In fact, I think we should. I agree. So those are my comments. So,
could I ask a question of Mr. Robiscotti real quick?
Sure.
Do you have any proposals right now, or what is your time frame? I guess my question
I don't
is,
have a time frame.
My question is, if we do...
As far as near future, no. I don't have anything planned.
And would you be supportive of us looking at not only encompassing a larger area, but potentially a higher density as well? Would that be something that might be appealing to you?
Yeah, and yes, it would. And I never really had thought about that of higher density until the council brought it up this evening. One thing I would like to mention while I'm up here, if you go back to the picture on South Elm, if you look on a map, all the property lines look straight at the back. When you look at it here, you actually see the real property line. They're very jagged. In fact, I believe that my lot on 178 South Elm is actually the largest or second largest lot on that whole block, and it's, I believe, 9 square feet shy of a quarter acre. Let me point that out.
Just make sure I get it back.
Okay. That's pretty nice. Let's see how do we make this? Oh, there it goes. I am right here, 178 South Elm Street. What's unique about my property is my house is 90 feet off the street. My house is built on the very back of the lot. So I have a huge area in front of my house. And in fact, I don't know when it was really developed or how it was developed, but another thing with this lot is it actually has 2 driveways. It was like it was automatically designed, you know, whoever built it before, for some type of development in the future. And it is kind of unique in that, it does have 2 driveways, and it's really kind of set up for future development. Some of the other lots, yes, are a little narrow, but still all the lots are pretty big, with the exception of the 2 at the top on Poplar. You know, everything else is pretty good-sized lots and small houses.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, David. Okay, any other questions? Any other members of the audience would like to come forward? Okay.
I'll make a motion that I think will work.
Okay.
If I can find it.
Our professional motion maker is getting ready here.
And you want the resolution first or the okay. Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving general plan in a timely manner at potentially increasing this area in size and also into a higher density category as well. And that is my motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, since I went first and then I listened to Councilman Guthrie and Arnold, I see a lot of wisdom in what they said. If we pass this motion as it stands, does that sort of stand in the way or create extra work if we're going to go right back and look at changing the density?
No, I don't think so. I think if we, if we decide we want to slightly change directions or philosophies, I suspect it's going to be part and parcel of a much larger, more well-defined, comprehensive plan for that area. So I don't see it. I don't know. Teresa, you want to jump in here? Is this going to muck things up for the future?
No, I don't think so at all. We can go look at a larger project area in terms of more comprehensive planning effort. I will say that we did evaluate the density up zone for the lots fronting Aspen, and given those lots, you can see and what Mr. Rabishardi was talking about in terms of the jagged edges, most of the lots are just small, just enough, just have a decreased project area that doesn't allow a lot of them to subdivide with the 9 dwelling units per acre. And that coupled with the fact that we're facing a single-family neighborhood across Aspen caused us to pull out of that area for the time being. And again, looking at this as a very well-established single-family neighborhood and the kind of magnitude of change for that neighborhood to go multifamily. But we didn't look across from Aspen where you have, you know, some very similar issues going to the west. We would be happy to do that. I just wanted to let you know we looked to those lots facing Aspen. We are nearing the end of the year. We'll have four more general plans available to us. We would probably look at this in conjunction with our housing element, in which case we'd be evaluating this area for the purposes of affordable housing. We might not even have to count that general plan amendment when we come back. So this change tonight wouldn't prohibit, you know, a future change, unless it was so far in the future that we would expect a lot of those lots to come forward with a lot split and not merge or not do something that you guys may have in mind for a higher density or higher intensity infill.
With that comment in mind, I can support the motion. I would like to say that I'm dead set against it at this juncture, taking the higher density zoning into the residential part, single family residential part of Aspen Street in the future.
Okay, we have a motion, and Councilmember Costello, your second?
Stands.
Okay, any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Mayor. Yep. I'd like to propose an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving Development Code Amendment Case Number 06-005 to change the zoning for five properties at the northwest corner of South Halcyon Road and Fair Oaks Avenue from multifamily residential very high density to office mixed use, and change the zoning for the properties in the vicinity of South Elm Street near Poplar Street from single-family residential, SF, to multifamily, MF.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion on this one? Hearing none. Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. That takes us to 11A. Actually, item 10, we have no continued business. That takes us to 11, new business. And 11A is consideration of a proposed ordinance amending the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code as it relates to building and construction codes. Good evening, Chief. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys tonight?
Fine.
I assume we just start reading this. I would like to read a few notes here regarding the proposed code adoption, if we could. Okay. The state of California adopted new building codes on January 30th, 2007, and these codes were published June 30th, 2007. These codes include the 2000 editions of the California Building, Fire, Plumbing, Electrical, Mechanical, Historic Building, and the existing building codes. If a city chooses to adopt these codes, they can be amended with changes or additional codes. If a city chooses not to adopt these codes, then the city cannot amend them and the state codes become effective as written. On January 2nd, 2008, building departments in the state of California will begin enforcing over 3,350 pages of these new building codes and over 7,700 pages of reference standards. This will probably be the largest single code change in codes that any building department will ever see. The state has gone from a very familiar uniform building code to the new international building codes. We will be seeing some major changes in how buildings are designed, with changes in many requirements. The City of Arroyo Grande Building Division staff has already received many hours of training in the new codes and will continue to receive additional training over the next few years. We have now all new code books, some reference standards and training materials, which we need, and we believe we are ready to begin implementing the new standards on January 2nd, 2008. The California changes to the international codes include new seismic design standards that provide the latest in earthquake safety for the construction of all buildings in California. These standards are especially important in California since this state experiences approximately 75% of the nation's seismic activity. Wildland-urban interface fire protection standards were adopted to provide for better fire protection of structures located in areas prone to wildfires, such as those we've recently seen in Southern California. In addition, changes to building standards for persons with disabilities were adopted to introduce federal Department of Justice certification requirements. California continues to strive for barrier-free design and buildings to ensure that they are accessible to and usable by everyone. Another California change included relocating the administrative section of the International Building Code into the appendix. This administration section contains the duties and powers of the building official, permit and plan review requirements and expiration, right of entry, and other regulations critical to the operation of the building division. Thus, it became necessary to amend the California codes to include the appendix for each code. The City of Arroyo Grande has adopted the state building codes in the past and enacted a number of amendments and additional codes. It will now be necessary to adopt these new state codes in order to maintain our current standards and make additional amendments. The amendments to our municipal code falls into three main categories. First, additions to the state codes. Currently, Title 24 does not provide for damaged structures to be repaired or reconstructed to a structurally safe level, accounting for upgrades in wind and seismic standards. The inability to repair structures based on upon the most recent industry knowledge, thus preventing or mitigating future unnecessary damage or injury, is not in the best interest of the citizens we are tasked with assisting. With this in mind, the repair and reconstruction section has been drafted by a consortium of concerned statewide organizations, California Building Officials, California Operation OES, California State Seismic Commission, and other interested stakeholders. To permit jurisdictions to assist building owners in repairing their structures to reasonably safe levels based upon currently industry standards, which helps preserve our communities by preventing future losses. The repair and construction section establishes regulations as amendments to the building code for the expeditious repair of damaged structures. This allows FEMA to fund substantial repairs for these damaged structures. Another section is the safety assessment placards, which are used to indicate the condition of a structure during to allow for continued occupancy. These placards are used during emergency situations as well as daily code enforcement activities. The placarding amendment is recommended by the California Building Officials in the event we are subject to a disaster. Placards have been widely used in the past during earthquakes to denote the conditions of buildings and structures. Adopting the placards by ordinance makes them official and enforceable. Unfortunately, most jurisdictions have not officially adopted placards. Technically, these unofficial placards represent only a recommendation for those who perform the evaluation. As a recommendation, the placards do not carry the weight of law and cannot be enforced. Adopting the placards by ordinance make them official and enforceable. Once the placards have been adopted and before they are printed, the jurisdiction seal, ordinance number, and the responsible department's name, address, and phone number should be added. In past events, there have been a number of reports of placards being removed from buildings by owners or tenants. In other cases, there have been reports of unauthorized changes to these placards, usually from unsafe to one of the other categories. In both cases, adopting placards by the ordinance allows the jurisdiction to enforce the posting with local sheriffs or police as necessary. Placards are placed on a building to protect the owner, tenant, and the general public. No action should be permitted that would compromise such protection. The second section category includes amendments that will allow greater enforcement for code violations. In the past, the City of Arroyo Grande has adopted the Uniform Housing Code and the Code for the Abatement of Dangerous Buildings to assist in code enforcement activities. These codes are no longer published, and equivalent requirements are now found in the International Property Maintenance Codes. Finally, the third category encompasses alterations to the state code, modifying current sections or subsections, such as enhanced fire protection on all buildings. For specifications on this, I'd like to turn the time over to Chief Hubert.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. Fire sprinklers have been an effective tool in saving lives and property for many years. The United States Fire Administration reported that in 2005, the U.S. suffered 396,000 residential fires, 3,055 civilian fire deaths, and 13,825 civilian fire injuries, resulting in $6.9 billion worth of damage. Studies by the United States Fire Administration indicate that the installation of residential fire sprinkler systems could have saved thousands of lives, prevented a large portion of those injuries, and eliminated hundreds of millions of dollars in property losses. Several cities in the county currently have fire sprinkler ordinance. City of Morro Bay and the county are introducing a similar fire sprinkler ordinance to the one we are proposing. The city of Paso Robles is reducing their fire sprinkler threshold of 5,000 square feet to all newly constructed occupancies to be fire sprinklered. On November 5th of this year, representatives from several jurisdictions, members of the general public, and a representative from a local chapter of the Home Builders Association met to discuss the fire sprinkler ordinances that the various agencies were proposing during this code adoption cycle. Jonathan Hurst was our representative to identify those concerns from the building industry. The adoption of a fire sprinkler ordinance would be an appropriate and cost-effective initiative that will enhance our community's fire and life safety. In closing, staff believes that fire sprinklers save lives and properties. Having a fire sprinkler system is like having an invisible firefighter who is ready to spring into action 24 hours a day, every day. I'd be glad to answer any questions council may have regarding this report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That means if we move forward with the sprinklers and we don't need so many firefighters and we can cut the budget and no? Okay.
Just may not mean it as many in the future.
Okay. I do have a quick question, though. Is there, you know, referring to Title 24, it's obviously been an issue related to AB 32 and, of course, all of the energy efficiency issues that come up. Is there anything in these new codes that address that?
Well, the latest energy codes came into play in 05, and the state is just readopting those as is.
All right, so there's no change other than to what exists.
Yeah, Title 24 actually is all the state California building standards.
Right.
But people call the energy code Title 24. Just that's just what they call it. But the energy section has been around since September of 05, and it's not changing any.
So there's no more emphasis other than what existed in terms of use of renewables and
Not yet, but the 2008 code that's coming into play here really soon, probably in the next 18 months, is going to prepare the groundwork for green building, as the 2005 does now. It prepares and gets us in that direction more and more.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear. Any other questions, clarifications? Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of quick questions. One, with recent firestorms that hit Southern California, I found out that a lot of the structures that were lost due to incursion of embers into the ventilation systems. Do the new codes include any kind of provisions that deal with that?
Yes, they do. The California Chapter 7 of the Building Code is about wildland-urban interface and structural protection for those buildings located in those areas. We currently have a map in our office that shows where the local response and state response areas affect or abut the city properties. And we are looking at making new structures in those areas fire-resistive construction. And one of the big deals is, in fact, the venting, as you talked about. That's where it mostly comes from, or attached structures like decks that are not fire protective. I lived through the 2003 old fire in San Bernardino and videotaped it as it came through my yard. Walked away for 25 minutes, and when I came back, everything was just fine. I left for an hour to see my family who had evacuated, and when I got back, the house that was 100 yards further away from the fire zone than I was, because I was backed up to it, was completely burned to the ground. And the only reason behind that is because of the vents.
What do they do to make the vents not accessible to the embers?
They make baffles in them, so when things the wind comes through, it baffles them in such a way that the embers knock themselves out.
Very good, very good. And then in terms of sprinkler systems, I also understand that when I read the staff report, it said that the sprinkler systems are now very efficient in that the heads will go off only in areas that are affected. I had a conversation with someone from the fire service recently who said that in the past a lot of problems were you'd have an awful lot of water damage elsewhere in the house. So the technology is caught up, and we're only going to see the sprinkler heads going off in the affected areas.
That's correct.
Very good, very good. And the last question on the placards, Chapter 15.10. I take it we're talking about the yellow, red, green ATC-20.
That's exactly right, placards. ATC-20 placards.
Yeah, and now we've got Category 4 of stop work. Great, I think that's fantastic. I just have a quick question about the enforcement Does enforcement then go to law enforcement, or is that something that
code enforcement
would be dealing with?
The fire chief and the building official are designated by code as peace officers. That's what the building and fire code states. When they are employed like that, they are actual peace officers. And I've been through a Penal Code 832 class, which allows you the arrest and citation portion of that.
So if we got to a situation where we had a significant earthquake and this was an issue and we ended up with a number of placards out there, we would look to the fire chief and the fire service to do the enforcement on these issues and not law enforcement?
That's correct, and the building official, yes. The biggest deal on that, if I may expand, is the fact that usually when there's a large problem such as a major earthquake, we bring in other building inspectors from other jurisdictions. What has to happen in those situations is they need to be deputized, and then they can put up the placards and have the full weight of the law behind them.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Fellows?
Question for Jonathan or Chief Hubert. Since you're dealing with international building codes, does it appear that they're going to be unreasonably broad and cumbersome and require more staff time?
No, actually, what's happened, there were three major code groups in the United States, the uniform codes, which is everything west of the Mississippi, then the Southern Building Code Conference, and another northeastern building code. And what the international code group have done is they put those all together and took the minimum requirements for each instead of the major requirements. And then California has taken those and put the things back that they felt were appropriate to maintain our safety and standards.
Okay, good. Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, my question relates to the sprinklers on existing structures when you remodel them. Are we going to require sprinklers on any structures during some sort of a remodel, and at what point would that kick in? Because I've seen that an issue in other communities.
We're going to require the sprinklers to be retrofitted when they go 50% over the 1,000 square foot threshold. So if somebody has a house that is 1,000 square feet, and once they go over that 50% threshold, then it required the retrofit.
So a 1,000 square foot home is 1,500 square feet.
That's correct.
And a 2,000 square foot home would be 3,000 square feet, just
correct.
To clarify, which is the way we do with other legal norms. I will say that'll be controversial. We'll see a lot of requests for exemptions there, but I can support that still.
Okay, any other questions or clarifications? Okay. If not, this is not a public hearing, but we do.
That was Joe. It wasn't me.
Oh, okay. But thank you for the nudge. But we do invite members of the public to come forward on key items. This is one of them. Any member of the audience would like to come forward on this, feel free.
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. One of the questions I had regarded something that we saw a lot of this last winter, where we had some very hard freezes, which were not typical but did happen. Because of the industry I worked in, I got to see a lot of water damage from pipes that were specifically routed, water pipes specifically routed through ceilings. What kind of insulation, or what are we going to do with this, where we're going to be putting now every new home that gets built will have to have water pipes in the ceiling? I think that should be addressed somehow within the code, so that every time we have a hard freeze, we don't have every new house getting flooded with broken water pipes in the ceiling. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You want to comment on that?
Sure. That's an excellent question. We had a lot of problems in the North County with fire sprinkler lines, especially freezing, and I can understand why there's an issue with that. I just got an email today from our fire prevention officers group, and we've come up with a standard since last winter of how to protect fire sprinklers, because that's all we're talking about. But plumbing lines also have the same requirements, how to protect those in areas where we do have a hard freeze. And any exposed heads will be a dry pennant system in which there is no actual water in the head. It would be like in a commercial building when you have a walk-in freezer, you have a head that doesn't have water in it. You have a plug that when the sprinkler head goes off for whatever reason, the plug goes away and the water is there, but there is no water actually inside the piping inside the freezer unit. And that's the kind of method we'll be using for those. And in attic spaces and things like that, most of the water piping is covered with insulation, or it will be protected appropriately for that, for those reasons. But good, that was a good question.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the audience? Yep. Okay. We'll close public comment on 11A and bring this back to the council. And Mayor Pro Tem, you may go first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I actually asked for this because I have a little experience in Arizona. Scottsdale, Arizona was the first city in the nation that actually had a fire sprinkler ordinance. And as a home builder out there, we were required to put them in. And what I found is actually as more and more the cities incorporated it, and since every home was required to have them, the cost became quite affordable since it was an entire industry that built up around it, and it was no longer this foreign item that builders were afraid of. I know that I actually lived in several homes that had the sprinklers, and when I moved here, one of my concerns was actually living in a house that did not have the sprinklers. And I built many homes with them, never had one problem with them. So I can definitely attest from a personal experience that they're very efficient from a standpoint of safety, but they also, I think, they give you a comfort level, and your insurance company actually rewards you for having them. So I think it's one of the few code amendments that we can put into the cost of building a home that actually the homeowner will see some savings on over time. So as far as the changes go, I'm glad to see that we're standardizing on the international code. I think it'll be easier for everyone. Obviously, codes constantly are evolving, and so it's difficult for builders initially, but I can definitely support those changes, and I'm very excited that we are finally getting a fire sprinkler ordinance in our city, and I hope the entire county adopts it as well, because in the long run, it'll make it actually cheaper for everyone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I do can support the state fire code items and the placards and those kinds of things are certainly things that we want to support. I'm also supportive of the sprinkler system. I will say that I've seen this in other communities, and when we start seeing the retrofitting, that's where we're going to have the issues. But I don't know any other way to deal with it in order to be consistent with their legally nonconforming as a 50% rule. So I can support that as well with that reservation or comment there. But certainly I can support this going forward this evening. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Fellows.
Nothing to add. I can support it.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
And I will echo the same sentiment. I think that this is the thing to do, and I think that it's prudent that we go forward, and I will support this.
Okay. Thank you. This is something that I knew was coming. It was at the I think it was two meetings ago of the Public Safety Policy Committee for League of Cities. We had a pretty comprehensive presentation from Kate Dargan, who's a state fire marshal. And so she was commenting on the fact that this was something that was going to be coming to all of the cities. And there was also an admonishment that we needed to get our staff through the training that was going to be provided. So it was actually during one of those meetings that I got on the phone and I called back here because I knew that there was going to be training that was going to be occurring in South County here. In fact, that's where she was headed. She was headed to San Luis Obispo. I'm sorry, it was going to be at the library, I think, in San Luis Obispo. And I wanted to make sure that we knew about it. So I called back here. Not only did we know about it, but we were all lined up for it, and some of our people had already been trained. So we were well ahead of the curve. But I knew this was coming. It's something that we need to do, and so I can support it as well. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move we adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code Section 8.04.010 related to the adoption of the California Fire Code and International Fire Code, adding Section 8.04.020 related to automatic fire sprinklers, amending Section 15.04.010 related to the adoption of the California Building Code, California Electric Code, California Mechanical Code, California Plumbing Code, California Existing Building Code, and the International Property Maintenance Code, and repealing and amending provisions within Titles 8, 12, 15, and 16 for internal consistency and clarification.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Jonathan. Good presentation. Okay, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member Items. We have none this evening. At least none listed. Item 13, City Manager Items. None this evening?
None, sir.
Any council communications, correspondence, comments that we've had over the past couple of weeks? Anything?
I'd just like to make a comment on how pleased I am with staff's work on getting the drainage basin off of Grand Avenue, prime Grand Avenue property, and getting a restaurant that seems to be extremely popular in its place, and a much better looking, in my opinion, than what it replaced. I think that's great planning, and again, it's my night to compliment staff, so I just wanted to get that. I tried to get that in last time, but I forgot until after we had the agenda, after we had whatever we call it. So anyhow, congratulations to staff. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Well, while we're on the subject, I want to publicly thank your daughter, Kristen Barnick, for her hard work and continuing to provide organization for the Tree Guild here in the community. And there were a few of us out there, oh, actually several of us out there, in that same parking lot where Applebee's is, and planting new trees and rearranging some of the landscape that went in one area hastily, and but putting some trees that are going to make a huge difference, I think, in that parking lot. So kudos to everybody who was out there, and for Kristen especially, for keeping up the enthusiasm and the activity.
Well, we're plugging the Tree Guild, just for anybody who wants to come out this Saturday at 8:30 at Ocean View, we're going to be planting 9 more trees.
Okay, yeah, we have another work day for AG and Bloom, too, starting at 8 o'clock. Okay, any other council communication? Staff communication, anything this evening?
No, sir.
All right. This will take us to our final community comments and suggestions. Steve, anything? Okay. Then item 17 is adjournment.
So moved.
Okay. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.